VentureCast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm going to get super soppy.
Okay. I just confessed. Go ahead.
The musical community here, I can't imagine finding anywhere else, and which does not mean that it doesn't exist anywhere else, but for me, the people that I have met here through musical community and the continuum of Boston musical community have become more than just collaborators and people that you call up to play or blah, blah. They are my people.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
It's June and I am still wearing my boots. That just line kills me. Kills me. Tanya Donnelly, welcome to 50 Years of Music with 50-year-old white guys. It's a good. Did you know that was the title of the podcast? Maybe I should have prepped you.
I did not.
It's what we call the on the nose podcast description.
Because this is what you do at 50. You start a podcast.
We're going the other way. I like to think of it as like the organic food movement. Like we just tell you everything that's in the box right on the cover.
Right. You know? Yes. Yeah. Here are your allergies laid out for you.
That's right. Well, welcome, Tanya Donnelly. Your career spans, back in the 80s, Throwing Muses, and then the Pixies, and then Belly ever since, right?
The Breeders, I believe.
Not the Breeders. You're absolutely right.
Belly, and
that's
then
why I'm solo, here.
Belly solo, Belly again, and then Loyal Seas is the new band that I've been.
Oh, nice! I love it. We could play
collaborating
like six degrees of separation.
Yeah.
With your career, right. Well, welcome you. I don't know if you know this, that you are our Boston expert. Mm-hmm. We're taking a musical road trip and Boston is our next stop. And okay. So you are our artist in residence for the city of Boston.
There are so many other people
that
would have more information. Their files would be much more easily accessible than mine, but let's see how.
It's going to go great. Yeah. I mean, we did do New England excluding Boston, and you would have fit in that category as because you're originally from Rhode Island.
Islands originally, yeah.
Okay. Well, no, we got you for Boston.
All right, I'm fine. I'm still
all right.
No,
all
I've right, been well, 30 years, so I, 35 years, I think, so I can do this. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, here's the first question off the bat. What are some of your favorite venues in Boston, either as a fan or a musician? You can talk about current days or go back.
I mean, when Throwing Muses first moved here, when we first landed here, I would say TT the Bears, The Rat, obviously. Jonathan Swift when I was first here, Jax when I was first here, both of those sort of disappeared soon after we got here. Johnny D's in Alston. Oh my gosh, so many good. The Paradise, which is now. Right now, at the moment, the Burren in Davis.
Yeah, sure.
Love playing there. Probably that's my favorite, to be honest.
Oh, nice.
It's just got such a, it's a great size. It's got such a good vibe. I like, in my dotage, I prefer to play in a smaller room with people whose eyes I can see. And it's just more comfortable for me.
Right.
It's just such a, I mean, I feel like the older I get, the more it's odd to like be in a room with people having conversations and really connecting. And then all of a sudden you're 7 feet taller than them and your lights in your eyes and you can't see them. That feels clear to me now, whereas that sort of was a kind of like a, more something more comforting to me at one point, if I couldn't connect.
Right. Right.
Like, I want to be standing on the floor and have it feel more conversational, is not the word, but just connected.
I actually feel like that's a theme we're hearing from artists is, when you first start out, those first few gigs, you're so thrilled that people came to see you and there's this deep connection. And then you reach this level of popularity where the room gets bigger and the show's more exciting, but it also becomes a little more anonymous. And then if you stay in it long enough, you get back to this place where you're looking for that audience connection again. But that's an interesting, that career arc seems to, a lot of our artists have talked about that.
Yeah.
And just in terms of what they're looking for in a live performance. So,
yeah.
It actually fits with our podcast career as well.
Indeed. Yeah.
Because it was just getting too big. So we tried to make it more personal.
So grateful to have it back to where you can really.
We can wrap your arms around it.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Have you been to all those places, Tim?
Gosh, I've been to, for some reason, I never went to the Rat.
No way!
I know. And it's the one that kind of had a legendary status, even when I was in college. But I'd go to Bill's.
Oh, well, yeah.
There's a place called the Linwood Grill, where Danny... Right. My buddy Danny was a bartender. So, I went to a lot of those places.
Yep.
Gotcha. I went to the Rat a couple of times visiting friends because that was just, I was all I really did in college was go out and see bands. So I'd visit my friend Red and we would go to the Rat. So love that place.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. What about some favorite acts from that you either shared bills with or that you went to see as a fan, or like when you think of the Boston music scene and you think of the bands or the artists that you loved seeing or playing with, what comes to mind?
Oh my God. I mean, at what the point that we moved here, it was just, it was so fertile with great artists and great bands. It was, I was out every night. Pretty much when I got here. And it was also, and just such a, a really porous scene at the time too. Like people were really supporting each other across genres in a way, which was really nice. Who did I love the most? I mean, back then, oh my, it's just Salem 66, Mission of Burma.
Right.
Big Dipper, Morphine, well, Treat It Right, and then Morphine. There's a band called The Five that I loved. There was just so much going on at the time. Obviously, Hatfield and the Lemonheads and the Volcano Sons. Volcano Sons, one of my favorite Boston bands of all time.
Oh, gosh. All right. I got to check them out. I'm not familiar with them.
I've actually seen all those bands except the Five. That's a great list.
Wow.
That's great. I picked, we each pick a band for the show. I picked Moving Targets. Did you ever cross paths with them?
Great.
I love that. Burning and Water record was like finding, like,
amazing.
I was like the great lost Who's Purdue record,
Yeah. I mean, and the Flies, the Neats, there was just so, Black Cat Bone. There was so much good music. And it's just, it was exciting. Oh my God. Okay. Uzi. Can we talk about Talia Zedek's bands?
Okay. What kind of band was Uzi?
Uzi was, so Talia Zedek is probably one of my favorite songwriters and guitar players and singers. And she led this band. My first exposure to her was Uzi. And then she was Come. She went on to do Come, which is also incredible, amazing band. She's just the shit.
The shit. All right, so I got to check out Uzi. See, this is the shtick of this show is the fact that I don't know music very well, and Jeff will bail me out and point me in new directions, as will Ben. Unfortunately, a lot of this time I was seeing bands, but I was also listening to a lot of top 40 back in the day. And maybe, you know, wearing Bugle Boy jeans. But we're not going to talk about that.
Boy, I can't believe you. Yeah, this just became a confessional really quickly. So can I play a clip from Throwing Muses before we go to the next question?
Yeah, hit it.
So this is, I want to make sure I'm right. You wrote Not Too Soon. Is that correct?
That's one of yours? I wrote Not Too Soon with Kristen's father.
Okay. Oh, is that right?
Fun.
Awesome. Well, it's my favorite song off The Real Ramona, yeah, which is the Throwing Muses record.
Yeah. Her dad, my stepsister's dad, who is not, he really, you know, on the other side of the marriage that connected us.
Yeah.
He wrote, it's a chorus that we used to like play together, Kristen and myself and her dad. Uh-huh. And that was one of the songs that he would play for us, not the whole song, but the chorus, the beginning of the chorus. So the chorus is his, it was more folky. He's kind of, you know, Neil Young.
Oh, okay.
School of music, you know. And then I turned it into whatever. And added everything around it. But
cool. Yeah. All right, so we're going to play a little bit of that, and then Tim will start grilling you again. But this is Not Too Soon from Throwing Muses' The Real Ramona record. She.
That's the fun part. Man.
I know. I'm sorry. So that was a record. I remember this. I'll let you know. I did go out and buy the CD, but that was one of those records where your friends are sending tapes back and forth in the mail of all the cool music they're discovering. And I first heard that on The Real Ramona was on one side, and Richard Thompson's Rumor and Sigh was on the other. And I just left that in the tape deck of my car for like 6 months. I just remember like those two records are just indelibly linked for me, and they would just like roll one into the other. So
that is awesome. That is awesome. All right. Well, I said 10 to 15 minutes. I'm already stretching it. So let's get to the hard question. I grew up in Scituate, Massachusetts, and I think Scituate will always be with me. And I'm wondering about how Boston has affected you and how it sticks with you. You know, how has it shaped your artistic career in a sense?
I'm going to get super soppy.
Okay. I just confessed. Go ahead.
The musical community here, I can't imagine finding anywhere else, and which does not mean that it doesn't exist anywhere else. But for me, the music, the people that I have met here through musical community and the continuum of Boston musical community have become more than just collaborators and people that you call up to play or blah, blah. They are my people, you know, they're the people that my children know and have grown up with. They're the people that they're my friends. They're, you know, it's become like, it's just, there's true family here.
Yeah.
And that's a gift. And that, I mean, I feel like just the main thing that Boston moving here, and thank God I did at the age of 18, it just, from day one, it was just the most welcoming, not always, you know, it's tricky.
Sure.
I mean, like anything, you know, there are trials and tribulations, but just this place has been just, you know, everything to me. It's been musical family, actual family,
right?
You know, how I met my husband and had our children, you know, and chosen family.
Yeah. It's so funny. I wonder if, like, the 20-year-old or 18-year-old who moves to Boston and what her conception of artistic success might be at that age, would probably be so different than what you've what you've discovered. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know.
Go Boston.
Tim's been waiting for this one for.
That's right.
Since
that's
we started
right.
The travelogue, it's just like,
go Boston.
All right. Now I got to put you on the spot. Whether we're talking about you're a little kid and your dad gives you a guitar, or whether you're talking about being a teenager going to shows, or as a performer at any stage of your career, what's a favorite musical memory you have that you associate with Boston, like a specific memory?
You
can have two. Okay.
The first one was our Gary Smith, who was in Lifeboat and ended up running Fort Apache.
Okay.
And managing me for years and producing me and producing the Pixies and Natalie Merchant. Man, I mean, he had a huge, huge, huge part of Boston musical history. We opened for his band when we were in high school. We opened for his band at in Newport.
Okay.
He basically came backstage and was like, I mean, I'm gonna collapse time to make it a simple story, but it was like, come to Boston. I will produce you. I will mentor you. I will get you jobs. And he, you know, basically we came here with a net provided by Gary Smith.
Wow.
From that point on, you know, he was such a huge part in everything that I did and is still to this day, you know, in terms of like who I go to for support and advice. So that's one.
Okay.
Two, I would say would be watching the Pixies for the first time when they opened for us at the Rat. For the first time, actually, that would be the second time. The first time was at Amherst.
Okay.
Oh, no. UMass.
UMass.
UMass was the first time. And we were like, what is happening at that? You know, that was exciting. But at the Rat, when they opened for us at the Rat, Kim had just, I mean, we already knew the music and were blown away, but Kim had come from her day job as a receptionist and I want to say it was a doctor's office or some medical, you know, place. And she came in like her skirt suit and her hair blown high out on stage with her bass with a cigarette hanging out of her mouth and just, you know, I fell in love with her, first of all.
Yeah.
But also just the excitement of them in that, just hearing those songs for the first time. It was amazing.
That's a heck of a double bill.
That was at the Rat.
Yeah. That's amazing too, that's Frank's first band too. I remember hearing an interview with him and they were talking about the Pixies and like, well, how many bands were you in before you hit gold? And he's like, that's my first band. Can you imagine? That you're playing your second or third gig and realizing you put that together and the first time you go out for it.
And what one thing that I loved about the Pixies when they were started is that they were just so crazy about each other, and you could see, that's a really wonderful thing to see in a band.
Yeah.
They're just so into their thing. They're so psyched to be there with each other doing this thing. And they're just such a shining example of that early band excitement. Such a good.
Well, if any listeners were at that show, I want to talk to you. That's going to be our next. I want to know what the vibe was like in the room and whether or not people realized what a great night that was in the moment. Because that's a heck of a double bill. I don't know how many listeners we have a lot of listeners from India. I don't know if they would have been there.
Oh,
but they would. They wished that they were. There's no question about it.
I know. Nothing was documented back in those days either.
Right.
No. Oh, well, you are just so awesome to spend part of your Tuesday evening with us. Thank you for being here. And we wanted to end it with one of your personal favorites of your own creation. So song?
This is a very Boston. This is as Boston as it gets. So.
Okay, here we go. This is Mass Ave from Swan Song Series from 2016, Tanya Donnelly.
Hi, I'm Lessa Gaudet, host of Her Extraordinary Life by Design podcast, where we celebrate women who are shaping their lives one extraordinary day at a time. I speak with women from all over the world about what they do and how they are passionately pursuing their dreams and creating meaningful impacts on their communities. So come join us and learn about all there is to learn about these extraordinary women.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electrocast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electrocast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, The Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electrocast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electrocast.